Hello, and welcome to the Tea with Tresetta podcast. I invite you to join me each week where I'll share the training, encouragement, and answers you need to be successful in your purpose, as well as interview some awesome women of faith walking fully in their God-given purpose through entrepreneurship. I'm your host, Tresetta Alexander, faith-based business coach and founder of Sister Spotters. I believe you can be wildly successful without competing or compromising your beliefs. Let's dive in. Purpose pursuers, welcome back. This is your host, Tresetta Alexander, faith-based business productivity coach and motivational speaker. This week, I am bringing to you some very timely information with my guest, Amanda Herndon. We are talking about financing your business, how to negotiate the process of seeking finances for your business, and you know, getting creative with how to find the monies that you need in order to get the journey started. Now, my guest, Amanda Herndon, has over 20 years of experience in the banking industry, and she brings some really valuable information and busts some myths, as it were, as it relates to startup financing. Now, I specifically wanted to have her on the show for the month of April because it is Financial Literacy Month. However, at the time that we recorded this episode, we had no idea that when the episode aired, we would be in the middle of a global pandemic. So while the information she shares is broad in its information, it's still applicable to even now. And so I hope that you will be able to take her sage advice and information and apply it to your life and your business, even now in the midst of all that is going on. Now, before we dive into this week's episode, I want to invite you to join me inside my Facebook group, Kingdom Purpose Pursuers. Inside the group, we support one another in our kingdom purposes, as well as I do monthly group coaching sessions and trainings inside the group so that you can be empowered and equipped to fully walk in your purpose. So I hope you'll join me over there at Kingdom Purpose Pursuers on Facebook. And without further ado, let's go ahead and dive into Amanda's interview. Hey there, Purpose Pursuers. Welcome back to another episode of the Tea with Tresetta podcast. And today I am so excited for this topic because it kind of set a firestorm off in my Facebook group, Kingdom Purpose Pursuers. And so we are going to be talking about finances, especially like business finances. And I have the Amber Herndon sitting down with me today to share with us her expertise and how we can best prepare ourselves to fund our purpose pursuit. Amanda. Hey. Amanda, oh my gosh. Did I say Amanda the first time too?
No, you said Amber, right, but that's okay. I knew who you meant.
Oh my gosh. Amber, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Oh, I'm so glad to sit down and talk with you. This is such a important topic. It could be a very sensitive topic. It could be a very taboo topic, but it's nevertheless, it is a conversation that really needs to take place.
Absolutely. I agree with you 100%. Having been in the industry for over 20 years, dealing with business owners, the biggest hurdle that most people face is, okay, where do I get the money? And as we've talked offline about the old adage of it takes money to make money, so many people come to me and say, well, that's great, but where do I get the money so that I can make money? And so I really am excited that you're covering this topic because I think your listeners are going to find it very valuable and hopefully walk away with some really good information to grow their business or to start their business.
Yeah, awesome. I'm so excited to have you here. Well, I like to start my show out with rapid fire questions. It gives my audience an opportunity to get to know you in a hurry. And it also helps us to get into a conversation and break the ice. If anything really interesting comes out of that, we will circle back around to that later on in the interview. How's that sound?
Perfect.
All right. Are you ready?
I am ready.
Okay. Ready, aim, fire. Where did you grow up?
Okay, so I am a country girl. I grew up in Taylorsville, Kentucky, which is a little country town outside of Louisville. And my family still owns a big farm out in Taylorsville. And I recently sold my house out there and moved to the big city of Louisville.
Okay, yeah, so you live in Louisville now.
I do.
Mm-hmm. My brother went to school there, and my sister-in-law is from Louisville, so cool.
Okay. It's a beautiful town. Definitely Southern hospitality.
I have not been yet, believe it or not. So I'll have to make my way to Kentucky.
You'll have to.
All right. So this is the Tea with Tresetta podcast. And so I always have a cup of tea when I record my episodes. And this morning or this afternoon when we're recording it, I am drinking peach, organic peach tea by Tazo. This has been my favorite lately, so you guys have heard me talk about this. But so, you know, Amber, that means that I gotta ask you, which one is it? Is it coffee or tea?
Well, it's Amanda.
Did I do it again?
You did it again.
No, you said Amanda.
You know, it is Amanda, yeah.
Oh, I wrote down Amber. That's why I keep doing that.
No, it's totally fine. But I am a Java junkie. I love coffee. And I used to put a lot of sugar in my coffee. So I've tried to get away from the sugar. Mm-hmm. So now I put a lot of hazelnut creamer in my coffee. So it's more of I'm a hazelnut creamer drinker with a little bit of coffee. So.
Oh, you sound like my husband. He I always tease him and tell him that he likes a little coffee with his cream.
Yes.
And hazelnut is his favorite as well. All right. So what's your favorite pastime?
I love to work out. And I would have never thought, if you had asked me that 5 years ago, the people that said, oh, I love to work out, I thought they were crazy. And long story short, this is a little bit of my story. I came out of a very abusive marriage and I financed a kickboxing gym. Mm-hmm. And I kept telling the owner, I said, I'm going to come. Keep in mind, I was about 88 pounds heavier than I am now, in really horrible shape. But I had been an athlete all my, you know, teen and early 20s. So mm-hmm. I knew what fitness looked like. I just wasn't doing it. So anyway, finally, one day I showed up at her gym, like I said I would, and I fell in love with kickboxing. And now I kickbox and I lift weights heavy every day.
Awesome. Cool. Yeah. I got to get back on the bandwagon. I've been a little lazy. And as we age, it is really important for us to keep moving our bodies and doing things to not just eating right, but also getting that physical exercise. So
absolutely.
You're inspiring me to get back to it. I just told my husband yesterday, I was like, I have got to get back to working out. I miss
it. I turned 44 in January, and when I turned 40, I was still in the abusive marriage, but had decided it was time to leave, and still wasn't in the right place mentally. So before I turned 41, a lot of changes had happened, and I decided I'm going to be in the best shape of my life, and I literally am. I lift heavier than most of the women in the gym. Actually, probably other than my trainer, I do lift heavier than most of them. And it's just, there's something so fulfilling about knowing that age doesn't have to stop you. You can be anything and everything you want to be. It's all mindset.
I love it. I love it. All right. So, besides the Bible, mm-hmm. what book has had the greatest impact on your life?
Oh, the Bible is amazing for sure. But I read a lot. And so some of my favorites recently have been I love Rachel Hollis, Girl, Wash Your Face. And I just feel like she's a real individual who will just say, hey, you know, I wake up, this is what I look like. It's not always pretty. This is what life looks like. It's messy. And I think that's a little bit of an inspiration to so many women, just to realize that it's not all glossy and it's not all perfect. The book I'm reading right now, and I am really getting a lot out of it, is Can't Hurt Me by David Goggins. And the language is a little bit hardcore, totally opposite of the Bible. But to see someone who went through such a struggle in his younger life, he came from an abusive childhood, and he literally has the hardest, toughest mindset I have ever heard in my life. He went through Navy SEAL training like 3 times, and he's done Ranger school, and just some of the experiences that he talks about in Callousing Your Mind has been absolutely astounding to me. To me, it's inspirational in the fact that mindset truly can change your life. It's all one decision away. You're one decision away from determining whether or not you're going to be a success or you're not. So.
I love that. You're one decision away from determining.
I'm actually starting a podcast with that title.
Oh, really? Oh, okay. Awesome. When are you planning on releasing it? Getting it going?
So I'm doing all my prep work. I have my podcast lined out. So actually I was getting ready to record and go live with it probably in the next probably 2 weeks, let's say.
Okay. Well, I'll have to be on the lookout for it then.
Thank you.
All right. Last rapid fire question. What is your superpower?
I feel like I am an amazing, encouraging person. My superpower, I'm transparent. And I think because I'm so transparent with the struggles that I've gone through, with the way I live my life, with the way I raise my children, the way I work, I think that's very inspirational to a lot of women. And I think that's where I feel good, but I think I feel good when I make other people feel good. And I used to struggle with people pleasing. So it's evolved into something totally different. I no longer care about pleasing people, but it's more about inspiring people.
I love that. I love that. I certainly have gotten to know you a lot more through just the rapid fire questions, but take us a little deeper. Tell everyone a little bit more about yourself and your business, what you do, how you help people.
Okay, so I am Amanda Herndon. I am 44 years old, and I always say that because I think sometimes people, again, think that, you know, life ends after 35, and I think that's so untrue. What I do for a living, they give me a really fancy job title, but the reality is I try to break it down so that even a 10-year-old understands what I do. So I always ask people, do you ever watch Shark Tank? And the majority of people have. And so I explain, I'm the shark. And what I do is, just like Mark Cuban and Lori and Mr. Wonderful, I fund businesses. So I can help fund startups. I can help fund growth and expansion if you're at that point. But I do that only I loan out the bank's money instead of my own money. Now, my official job title is I'm the vice president of SBA business lending for Busey Bank, and that's Busey, B-U-S-E-Y Bank. We're based out of the Midwest and a great company. And I work with business owners or people that want to be business owners. So oftentimes that's, you know, someone who's leaving corporate America, they're tired of the rat race. They want to start their own company. They don't know how. Startups can be very difficult to finance, and that's really my area of expertise. I also do business acquisitions. So maybe I've worked for a company for a really long time, and the owner is a baby boomer, and he wants to retire, or she wants to retire, and maybe they have a long-term employee who wants to purchase that company and take it over. I can help with those type of acquisitions. I do special financing on special types of assets, like hotels and gas stations and bowling alleys and assisted living. So really anything in the commercial space I do, but I always like to preface it by saying all commercial lenders are not alike. So the reason why someone would work with me versus somebody else is maybe you're looking at starting a company or buying a company, or you need money for expansion and growth. Oftentimes when you're working with lenders, they want what we call hard assets. They want something tangible that they can take. They want a building, they want your home. They want something big to cover the entire deficit of that loan. And when you're working with the SBA, and that's the Small Business Administration, we allow for a collateral shortfall. So maybe you want to buy a company and there's no real estate involved with that. Most banks don't understand how to actually provide the financing for that because it goes against what their little box looks like. So by finding an SBA lender, we are able to help create a structure to help you get that deal done.
That is so amazing. Okay, I already know that you're gonna drop some knowledge on us today. Mm-hmm. And so I am, let's just go ahead and get into it. Let's do it. So the whole reason why I sought out to have someone of your caliber or your expertise on the podcast is because I saw this article on Startup Nation that was sharing the results from a recent survey or study that was done, and it noted that 73% of women business owners cite funding as their top challenge, or, you know, meaning like access to capital and cash flow. And that got me thinking, and inside of my Facebook group, Kingdom Purpose Pursuers, I did a poll to see what, you know, based on kind of like my experience as a coach, the different areas that people struggle with. And I did a poll to see kind of where the people in my group felt, and overwhelmingly they felt it fell right, just like in this study that was done. And and so I use that information to do, I do monthly group coaching calls and inside of with a group. And for February, I decided to do focus on funding, like financing your business. Mm-hmm. And I just share it with the group. This is not my area of expertise, but I just share it with the group, just kind of from my own personal knowledge, 10 different ways that they could like find money. So quote unquote, find.
Okay.
Money to finance their business. And so I want to share with you really quickly what those 10 things were that I shared with them. And then I'd love to know if there's any additional sources that you can think of, or if there's any that you would say, please don't do that.
Okay, great.
Sure. Okay. So the 10 are, number one was personal savings, using your own savings to finance it. Mm-hmm. Two was reducing your own personal expenses to free up money.
Yes.
To do so, to pre-sell products and services, family and going to family and friends for loans, then using micro loans,
mm-hmm.
credit cards, looking for an investor, business loans or like lines of credit, grants, and then crowdfunding.
Okay.
Those were the 10 that I shared. Is there anything that I'm leaving out or anything that you would say, please don't do that?
No, I think your list, you know, really is touching on the main topics of what I would recommend. I think we could dig into a little bit deeper some of those topics, because I think people may not always understand mm-hmm. when you say, okay, business loans and lines of credit. Well, not all business loans are made the same way. And to maybe explore today or even in a later conversation as to what should you be looking for? What should you be looking for in a lender, in a bank? And what can you be prepared for if you do want to go the route of a business loan? And some of those topics are all tied in together. Oftentimes, it's a component of a lot of those things that you talked about. One thing that you didn't mention is seller financing. And so with seller financing, oftentimes the type of deals that I do, the bank will finance a portion of the note, the borrower will put in some type of equity. And what equity means is they're putting in some level of money. So when you talk about personal savings, depending on what level of company you're wanting to start or buy into is going to depend on what you're looking for. So if I'm looking at, you know, I'm going to start an MLM and I need, you know, a couple of thousand of dollars to do that. Well, more than likely, it makes a smarter choice to use cash, possibly use a credit card to get that off the ground. Now, let's say I'm wanting to do a larger scale business and it's $2 million or $4 million. Well, the majority of Americans don't have that kind of cash in the bank. And so then you have to really be strategic about how do I get it done? Mm-hmm. And so when you're looking at that, cash savings is also a huge component of that, because as a lender, I need to know that you have skin in the game. You're not using all my money, because right. there is some level of risk you have to take personally. So when you use SBA financing, the SBA requires that you use a minimum of 5% of your own cash. Now, your own cash can look like money that you've saved. It can come from retirement. And I can talk a little bit further about that, how you can utilize that if you're not of retirement age. It can be gifts from family and friends, like you mentioned. But there has to be some level of skin in the game. Now, as a banker, the more skin you have in the game, the lower my risk is and the better I feel about your deal. So if you're thinking, I want to buy a company, then we also have to determine, well, you know, what do you have right now? What assets do you have, or what liquidity do you have? So that's a huge component of deciding maybe what type of company you're looking at doing. So, that's one facet of that. And so microlending, a lot of people don't know about microloans. Those are a great, great chance for financing if you need generally under $50,000 or more. And another thing you can do, I had a company years ago, these college kids came to me, they had this brilliant idea, but they had no credit and they had no money, but I knew they were going to be successful. I just could feel it. And when you've been around as long as I have, oftentimes you just get an intuition or a knowledge in your gut that, you know, okay, this person is legitimate, or, oh my gosh, this is the craziest idea I've ever heard in my life. And so you get really good at identifying that in the front end. And so these kids came to me and I'm like, I can't loan you the money. You know, you don't have any credit, you don't have any money, but I love your ideal and I think you guys can do this. And so I suggested to them, they needed equipment and they were looking at initially buying a building and buying all the stuff, and they needed like $2 million. And I'm like, it's not going to work. Doing it this way. I'm like, you need to start out smaller and then you can build up. So what they ended up doing was they leased the space that they needed. They did a shorter term contract just in case. And then what they did is they leased the equipment that they needed until they could get in a financial position where they could actually buy that equipment. So the company now has been going strong for, I think he's in his 10th or 11th year and doing amazing. So
that's so awesome. Yeah. I want to kind of circle back around, because you've mentioned the SBA a few times. And while I know what the SBA is, for those listening who may or may not be familiar with the SBA, tell them what that is and how they help small business owners.
Okay, so the SBA stands for Small Business Administration. It is a government agency that basically, they do not do your loan. That's one of the misconceptions. People will say, oh, the SBA, I've got to go to the SBA to get my loan. You don't go to the SBA to get your loan. You go to a lender who will then work with the SBA, and the SBA will guarantee a portion of your note. So the reason why the SBA is good for banks is if you decide you cannot or will not pay us, then the government says, okay, we're going to guarantee a portion of that note so the bank doesn't lose the entire amount of money. So it helps spur economic development and helps a lot of businesses that otherwise wouldn't be able to be financed, be financed. So, but there are still stipulations that go with that. And there's a lot of things to be aware of. Oftentimes, if you call a bank, and this is just like, again, going back to how do you find a good lender? Most of the time when people get to me, they have been drug around by a banker for weeks or months on end. I think we can do it. It's an underwriting. We need this. Now we need that. We need this. Now we need that. And then at the end of the day, they're like, I'm sorry, we can't do your loan. And generally it's for a reason that they knew day one, but they just didn't really, I don't know, they just didn't really communicate that very effectively. So what happens is when you're trying to find a lender, you want to know, are they an SBA preferred lender? And what that means is, do they make their decisions in-house? Meaning if my underwriters say, yes, we can do a deal, we don't have to get approval from the SBA directly. Now, some banks do not have preferential lending, which means they have to gather up a complete loan package. They send it to the home office, and then they wait for the SBA to determine if they like the deal or not. If anything in that package is incorrect, they'll kick it back. And then you have to, you know, go through the channel. So if you want it to move much faster and easier, you want a bank that has SBA preferred status. The second thing to that is you also want to work with an SBA lender who only does SBA lending, or their team is SBA specific. The reason why that is critical is oftentimes banks will say, yeah, we do SBA lending. Yes, we're a preferred lender. But you may get a commercial lender that only does one or two SBA deals a year. And so they don't understand. Rules change all the time. We're dealing with the government. So just think in your brain how convoluted and complex the government is. So when you're talking about money, things are always changing. The rules are always changing. What we can and cannot do, it's changing. And so because we work only with deals that are going to be SBA guaranteed, we are very familiar what those changes are and how it affects our borrowers. So if you get a commercial lender that does not have that information or is not doing this on a daily basis, number one, they're sending your deal to underwriters that are not familiar with that level of risk. They're used to having it 100% secured with real estate. More often than not, these deals don't have real estate attached to them. They're used to these deals having a much stronger cash flow. They're not used to startups. They're not used to that level of risk. So the likelihood of your loan being approved is minimized because you're just working with a group that it's just not their comfort zone. Mm-hmm. Most of those type of lenders, when it's, I think they're a good borrower, but they may say, well, we'll do it if we, you know, use an SBA guarantee on it. And then they don't have the infrastructure to get that loan from the approval stage to closing very efficiently. So when you hear those horror stories of, oh, it took me 6 months to get my loan closed, generally that's what's happened. They're muddling through that process. Whereas when you deal with an SBA specific lender, our underwriting team, we know what is going to go and what is not going to be accepted by the government. So we can make a decision quickly. We're used to looking at this level of risk. So when we see a deal, and it may be a $2 million deal, and we have very little collateral, if any, then we're comfortable with that, or we know how to get comfortable with that. And then we also have a closing team in place that understands all the documentation that's needed to get the loan to closing quickly. So the difference is, you know, one bank may, you know, get your loan to closing in 6 months, and we generally can get it to closing once we have a complete financial package between 30 to 45 days if all goes well. And we have things pop up sometimes too that can slow that down, but that's what the differences look like.
Okay. Wow, I'm sitting here at the almost with my mouth hanging open, because, you know, it's just stuff that we just don't know. And which is what, you know, which speaks right to the core of why I even wanted to have you on the podcast to begin with. So I know that there are certain things that lenders want you to have in place in order to even seek funding. So what advice or tips would you give to women who are preparing to seek funding? What do we need to have in place?
So the first thing we're going to look at before we even look at the financial statements of a company will be your personal credit. How have you managed your personal debt and credit? That will break a deal before anything else will. So if you have had issues in your personal credit, you need to start there first. Get your credit report. We can all Google and get our free credit reports and determine, are there any collections that need to be resolved? Do I have any information that's incorrect on there? And more often than not, the information can be correct, but maybe it's negative information. So to determine, you know, how do we fix that, or can it be fixed? And sometimes it can't be fixed. And so credit is a number one area to focus on. That's like step one. What does my credit look like? And then that's a whole nother conversation on how to fix credit. And I love to have that conversation, but probably more time than we have to focus on today. But let's just say credit and focusing on improving that. The minimum credit score that most banks are looking at, just to get comfortable, would be a minimum score of 640. Now, just because you have a 640 does not mean that your loan would be approved or that you're on the right path. 640 is really kind of like the bottom of the barrel, like, oh, okay, that's our minimum. You really want to score more upwards into the 700s. So a lot of times people will, especially now that Credit Karma and Credit Sesame are out there, they'll go to those websites to get their credit score. And while those sometimes will give you a pulse on what your credit looks like, that score may look very different than what the bank pulls on your credit score. Because sometimes people, the question I always ask in the beginning is, do you have good credit or do you have great credit? As a segue for someone to explain to me, well, I don't really have very good credit at all. So that we can have that conversation so that I can direct them in a better way. So, and sometimes people will say, well, I went to Credit Karma and they said my credit score is 670. And I know that generally their scores run a little bit higher than what the bank is going to pull. So again, a good lender will kind of preface that conversation by, you know, we may have some struggle. What is showing on your credit report right now? Have you had bankruptcies? Have you had foreclosures? Have you had repossessions? And just because you've had a bankruptcy or foreclosure or repossession does not mean you can't qualify for financing. We just have to understand the story behind that. And if it makes sense, then, you know, we can oftentimes go with that. The other thing that talking about, as you work with a lender, you need to be 100% honest with them. We will find out any skeletons in your closet. So if you think, oh, I had a bankruptcy, but it was 20 years ago, it's off my credit report. And I ask you, have you ever had a bankruptcy? And you tell me no, but you have. We find that out. The credit, the reporting that has to be done in order to close these loans, they go back a lot of years and all types of information pulls up. And again, it may not matter that you had a bankruptcy 20 years ago. We just have to understand what it was. It can be as simple as, I was 20 years old. I went to college. I got in all this credit card debt. I didn't know what I was doing. And I just wanted to start fresh. Okay, that's your story. I mean, if that's what it is, that's what it is. But it's the people that say, no, I never have, thinking it'll never show up. And so then when it does show up, then at that point, your credibility is now under question. And that's where underwriters get really sketchy when it comes to a deal, when credibility is now under question. So always be honest with your lender, no matter what it looks like, and tell them on the front end, because oftentimes if you say, you know, this is what happened, I had a foreclosure and this is the situation, then we know how at that point to mitigate that, oftentimes, so that we can get the deal done instead of trying to hide the fact.
Okay, so personal credit was the first one. What's next? What do you look at next?
So next is going to be, what type of access to cash do you have? What will your down payment be? So as I mentioned, the SBA, you have to have a minimum of 10% down. So, but even within that 10%, they're saying you have to have at least 5% of it being your own money. So there are lots of rules and regulations that kind of go into that. So when you're thinking about, I want to buy a business, I want to start a business, kind of make the assumption that you need at least 10% down in cash. And again, if you're not quite there, we can create some structures with business acquisitions where we have the seller carry a portion of that amount, but there are some rules that are involved with that that can make that a little bit sticky. But again, if you only have 5% and you're using every dollar that you have, again, a lender is looking at, well, what if something goes wrong? What's your backup plan? So I always say you need at least 10% regardless. And then, so it may be cash in the bank. It could be gifts from family and friends. It could be your retirement account utilized through a certain type of structure. Sometimes people cash out their retirements. I'm not saying that's a good idea. I'm just saying I've seen it happen. So there's a, you know, different ways of getting your down payment, but you also have to think about what's this really going to take from me. So if I'm starting a business, the projections that you do, oftentimes we're going to question you on those projections, like, well, where did you come up with these numbers? Sometimes people just literally pull them out of thin air because it sounds good. That is not the way to do proper projections. And we have never seen projections that actually have hit. And everyone tells us their projections are conservative, and it generally takes longer to make money than people realize. So you have to, as a business owner, be prepared to weather the storm. It is not all glamorous and easy. You know, it might be, oh, you get to work from home in your pajamas, but it may be you need more money before you can think about doing that so that you can live for the next few months until your business truly takes off.
So what I take away from that is the third thing is that you got to know your numbers.
You do have to know your numbers. Now, there is a great resource in almost, I think it's in every state in America, and it's called the Small Business Development Center. It is a free government agency. Oftentimes you'll hear it called the SBDC, and they can help you do your business plan. They can help you with your projections. They can help you prepare a loan package, and they are completely free. And the beauty of working with the SBDC is oftentimes they have industry standards. So if you want to open a daycare facility, they can pull out statistics in your area to know, okay, well, this is typically what your operational costs are. And this is typically the point, you know, it takes this many months for it to break even. And they have a lot of information. When we as a lender see projections or business plans that are that the SBDC helps with, we know that there's a little bit more thought and credibility to those numbers than just someone who says, this is what I'm going to do. Now, if you're buying a business, we're going to look at historical information for that company, and then we'll ask you to do your projections. And so maybe it's, well, the owner used to take $300,000 home in cash, but I only need $100,000 to live. Okay. And we can do certain add backs, and you may plan to grow the company, but we are, if it's an existing company, we're generally going to look at existing cash flow.
Okay. So we've got first addressing your personal credit and debt,
mm-hmm.
Looking at your access to cash and needing, yes. You know, preparing to have a minimum of 10% of whatever your loan is that you're trying to take out.
Yes.
And then three, knowing your numbers and making sure that you've got your business plan, your projections, and all that kind of stuff together.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
What else do we need to prepare?
So I think the other thing that we are going to look at as an SBA lender, we don't look at it quite as closely, but the collateral in, you're always going to hear collateral mentioned. So we are going to look at what you have available to offset the risk. And so be prepared if you're doing really any type of bank financing that they may ask to put a lien on your home. Oftentimes, even if you don't have the equity in it, they want that collateral just because when your primary source, biggest asset is on the line, we know that you will have a little more skin in the game and are more apt to pay that debt back. You can't just walk away. So that's another thing. And I think just and this is not necessarily anything that you're going to hear from a lender standpoint, but if you were thinking about starting a business, I hear this oftentimes, I want to start a business. And what happens is when you start a business, you're starting at zero. You're not making any money. You have to develop a client base. The transition period of when you're making money, you don't really know what that's going to be. It could be 1 month, it could be 1 year, it could be 3 years. You really don't know. So what I oftentimes suggest is if you're interested in a specific industry, I want to open a daycare, I want to open a boutique, I want to become an insurance agent, well, I don't know, whatever it is that you want to do. Instead of starting from scratch, look at, are there any businesses in my area for sale? Because right now we are going into the baby boomer generation, they want to retire. And what a lot of people don't understand is they want to retire, but they can only retire if they sell their company. And so a lot of people have said, oh, well, I've, you know, created this company and I want my child to run it one day. Well, maybe the child doesn't want to run it nowadays. So that business still has value to it. And so there may be someone who's selling a daycare who would love to sell it to you. And the beauty of that is you automatically have cash flow if it's being ran properly. So you can look at what they're doing. You don't have to reinvent the wheel. They've done the hard work. You just are paying them for the cash flow that they have generated. And then if you want to grow that, expand it, whatever, make it your own, that's beautiful. But you're not starting at zero. You have some level of income, hopefully, if you're buying the right company, coming in.
Right. Okay. That's not something that I ever thought about. So I appreciate you bringing that up because, you know, it does open things up and it can reduce some, you know, the risk that you're taking, mm-hmm. and, you know, shortcut some of the, like, you know, I started my business from scratch. I've been now coaching for just going on 3 years, and I'm just now starting to see the momentum because I've been building my business alongside my 9-to-5. And so right. I'm just now starting to gain the momentum. And, you know, I'm projecting that 2020 will be my year to be able to, where the business can sustain me, where I can mm-hmm. Make that transition. And so it can, you know, that's something that's real, where people need to know that while you could start a business and immediately, you know, quickly start seeing income generated in your business, that is not typically, I'll say it that way, correct. That is not typically the case. Like, I have a friend who launched her business 2 years ago, and she's doing phenomenal. She's, you know, like, been expanding. She's expanded services several times since starting. She brought her husband off of his job, and he works for the company. And so, like, she is doing amazing. And it was just, you know, it was almost like immediately. But the difference is she was working for someone else doing what she does, mm-hmm. already had a reputation in the community, yeah. already had a customer base. So when she went out on her own, she brought all of that with her to the table. So while it may look like she went and started a brand new business and was immediately successful, mm-hmm. What people may not know is that she wasn't just brand new to the game. She had already been doing it for like 10, 15 years, you know? So that's something that you have to keep in mind when you are preparing to start a business and be optimistic, yet cautiously realistic at the same time.
Right. I agree with that. I
wanted to ask, I've heard a few things that, and I want to see if you can either confirm or bust them as myths.
Okay.
When it comes to business financing, one of the things that I have heard is that you can't get a bank loan until you've been in business for at least 3 years.
Okay, so that is a myth. I will say when you are starting a company, it is going to be a harder underwriting process for you if you have no financial information to use. So with startups, can it be done? Absolutely. I do them. I have done them. What we're going to look at in order to bust that myth is, again, you need to probably be working with an SBA lender. And I'm not saying that just to sell myself. I'm just saying because I've done this for 20 years. Well, actually, I've done it for longer than 20 years, but that really shows my age there. But the reality is most banks don't know how to underwrite if you don't have existing numbers to look at. So a startup, what you are basing your decision on are projections, and how real are those projections? And if you're not doing this on a consistent basis, you don't have access to what normal projections look like for that industry type. You also are looking at what type of down payment do they have. So that 10%, if it's a brand new startup, depending on how much money you need, that may jump to 20% down. It may be 25% down, depending on the level of risk that your lender is willing to take. And also, they're going to look at, what's your backup plan? Do you have a spouse that may be able to handle the financial load of your family until this business takes off? So those are a lot of different things that we look at. In addition to, do you have good credit? And because banks assume that if you have excellent credit, you make good decisions. So why would someone with really good credit just throw it all to the wind on some random shot and possibly ruin their family's life, you know, like safety and security on a dream? So whether it's fair or not fair, that credit score is a huge component of, do you make good decisions or not? The other thing is, have you been in this industry? Like you talked about your friend. Maybe I am a fantastic banker. And then one day I just decide, wow, plumbers are making so much money right now. I'm going to be a plumber. Well, if I go to the bank and say, you know what? I've been a banker, but now I want to be a plumber because they're making good money. My projections could look beautiful. I could have excellent credit. I could even have money in the bank. But they're going to say, what on earth do you know about being a plumber? You don't. So there's so many different components that go into I'm starting a business and obtaining financing. So another story, maybe you have, I'll talk about the gym that I financed. She had been in the finance industry for 10 years. She had excellent credit. She had cash to put down. She had strong projections and a really good business plan. So that was an easy deal to do. And she wasn't asking a huge amount of money. It made sense. The level of risk was minimal compared to some of the things that we do. So to go back to your question, went on my tangent. Yes, you can get financing even if you've not been in business for 3 years.
Okay. Then what about personal credit versus business credit? So, you know, a lot of people don't realize that when you're starting a business, that oftentimes that they are looking to your personal credit, and there's a difference between your personal credit and establishing business credit. So can you speak to, like, how do you build business credit?
So business credit is often built through how you pay your vendors, how you pay your accounts payable and whatnot. How quickly do you pay them? There is something called a DNB, if you're in the industry, that's short for Dun & Bradstreet. And that is basically your business credit score. And so depending on how you handle your obligations, just like on the personal side, some of these vendors will report to the DNB like on a regular basis to let them know that you and your company are paying on time. And then so again, it just kind of goes back to paying your bills as agreed. So if it's a net 30, you pay it within that 30-day window.
Okay. Now, one of the things that I have heard is that in order to, you know, there are certain things that a bank or a lender would want you to have in order for you to be able to get financing, like that you have to have a physical address that's not your home, or that you have to have a separate phone number, different things like this that people may not necessarily think about when it comes to starting a business, because you're starting as a small business and you're operating out of your home. Is, again, myth or fact, or little bit of both?
So myth for the most part. So you cannot create a business and only give me a P.O. box. That's not going to work. Since 9/11, there are certain standards in place that we have to identify you. That requires a physical address. We also check to make sure that that physical address is a real address. Years ago, I haven't really seen it as much recently, but people would go to the UPS store and they'd get a post office box, and that's where they would have their business mail go to. That would flag it in a bank system that it wasn't it was a real address, but not a real address. So it would bring up some red flags. So if you are starting a business from your home, it is perfectly acceptable to use your home address for that. You don't have to have an additional number other than your cell phone. And the way technology is today, more and more people use their cell phone for both personal and business, and that's completely acceptable.
Okay. I think that was my last myth or fact.
Okay.
Question. We have covered a lot of ground, a lot of territory tonight or today. I don't even know what day it is, what time it is. Oh my gosh. I've been calling you Amber throughout the podcast. This has been a trip. It's leap day. Maybe it's because it's leap day when we're recording this.
That could be it.
No problem. But at any rate, I hope that you will, that we can have you back on the show, because I think that there's so much that you brought up that we could dig deeper into mm-hmm. that people really need to know. You know, we could be here for hours and hours really diving deep into these topics. So I definitely want to bring you back on the show later on. I'm thinking about doing a panel podcast where we can really have some dialogue on these various matters as it relates to both personal and business finance.
Absolutely. I think that would be amazing.
Awesome. Well, I'm glad you're interested in coming back. All right. So before we close out, one of the things that I like to do is ask my guest to share their favorite quote or motto with the audience.
Okay. So
Bible verse.
I am going to go with a motto, and it's action is better than perfection.
Yes.
Yes. And I am a profound perfectionist that has struggled with this. Oftentimes in the past, you know, we want things to be perfect before we jump. And sometimes you just have to jump. Now, me being a banker and conservative and a realist, sometimes that the perfectionism just says, you're just being real, you're protecting yourself. And I love helping entrepreneurs because they have that sense of, you know what, I'm going to do this. And I love that attitude. But I also think people, you know, kind of need a plan. So I do feel like when you understand what actions you need to take, like we've talked about today, okay, is my credit good? Okay, I've saved my money. I'm ready to go. Then go do it. You know, that's a beautiful thing. So, but yeah, action is better than perfection.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much for being on the show. Tell the audience where they can connect with you. Where do you live? Where do you hang out?
Okay. So I love Instagram, but you can find me on all social media platforms. So my Instagram handle is Amanda, AMANDA _ Herndon, HERNDON _. I'm on Facebook as Amanda Herndon. I'm on LinkedIn as Amanda Herndon, and you can reach me via email at Amanda, AMANDA .HGP, that's hathandhappy, gathandgirl, pathandpretty at gmail.com. And if you listen to this, you have questions, I am more than happy to consult, advise, or help you finance. You can reach me at 502-773-8504.
I will make sure to link all of this in the show notes so that in case you didn't get that, or like, you know, most podcast listeners know, I listen to the majority of my podcasts in the car. And so writing things down is not the easiest when you're driving.
Correct.
It's not the safest either. So I will make sure that there are links to all your social media platforms, as well as your email, phone number, all that good jazz in the show notes. Plus, the two books you got. Those of you who been listening for a while know that I always link the book that the guests share. So I will have links to all of that in the show notes for you. Again, Amanda, thank you so much for being on the podcast today, and I look forward to having you back.
Thank you. It's been fun.
Awesome. Well, Purpose Pursuers, you know how I like to close things out. You got this. And you know what else? God has you. I love you. I appreciate you. And I will see you next time.
Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, it would mean the world to me if you would help me get the message of purpose and prosperity out to as many believers as possible. You can do this by sharing the podcast with another Purpose Pursuer, or by leaving me a 5-star review on iTunes. Until the next episode, Kingdom blessings.